Joy comes on high and dwells deep inside. Joy takes its own time, and sometimes the path it travels winds through sorrow and regret. How do we recognize joy in a culture fixated on pleasure? When you learn of senseless deaths, it is easy to put joy aside. Remember, it is the living that can embrace life. Within life, we find the comic and tragic, the complex and simple, dark and light. Joy comes in paradox. Birth and death, winter inventing spring. Joy comes from understanding that all life is interconnected. Joy emerges when we risk revealing our inner truths, when we see the finely woven connectedness that is the light of love, when we honor all that truly matters, joy comes, even in the saddest and most blessed moments. Welcome, everyone, to the Unitarian Universalist Fellowship of Manhattan, on this beautiful winter, almost winter morning, when we celebrate song and music and community. Take a moment to greet each other with your warmth and affection. There is joy in our coming together this morning, joy in our sharing. Let there be truth heard in the words and songs we share. Let there be help and healing for our disharmony and despair. Let there be silence for the voice within us and beyond us. Let there be joy in our coming together. May this morning's music bring warmth to your heart.
Good morning, everyone. Michael asked me to say a few words about the new tradition that we started, which was the kids carrying out a candle lit off of the chalice. I didn't think it was safe to have the kids carrying a second chalice filled with oil. Just, oh, and it went out. It's magical. What we try to do with the kids week in and week out, sometimes with very meaningful, special moments that warm your heart and keep you going for another 3 months, is to extend the community that the adults share here, to extend the messages and the meaningfulness of our principles, of the ability to share. We're going out today. Let's light the kids' candle and call it good. The ability to share everything that the grown-ups do, only at the kids' level. And by carrying out the flame, we all gather together, all the kids' groups, and we sing a song, and we do a saying. And since today, kids, just stay where you're at. You don't have to come up just yet. But since today, kids, we're not going to all be back there together because a lot of the kids are going to stay in here and listen to music. Let's go ahead and do our UUs right now, okay? Are we ready? All right. We are the Church of the Unitarian Universalist. We are the Church of the Open Mind. We are the Church of the Warm Hands. Oh, helping hands. We are the Church of the Warm Heart. I was focused on who all was doing it. I'm sorry. The candle and the... Anyway, it really is special. The kids really appreciate not only having the children's story, but also having the special moment where each of them hopefully will get a turn to carry out the candle. Children who have not had a turn need to yell at me. In any case, thank you so much for letting us and the kids share this. And I have an additional announcement. And that is that last week, the board approved and a certain person accepted to be the interim DRE. That person is Sandy Nelson. I am honored to work with her, and I hope that we can all welcome her. In her continued leadership for us, details to follow on the listserv and other places. But the kids have been fantastic this year. We've really appreciated the ability to separate into now 5 groups: nursery, preschool, K through 2, 3 through 5, and 6 and up. And so volunteers are always needed, appreciated, and it really is meaningful to us to extend what happens here. Thank you all.
In addition to the announcements that are found in our order of service, many of you have probably already noticed the bake and craft sale, which will follow the service back in the Ina's LSUP room. There's a silent auction for several art pieces. The auction will end at 12:45. Come and enjoy and take home the creative gifts from our community. A special thank you to all who have donated this morning, especially our children. Ours is a welcoming community where we find connection, a loving community where we find meaning. Ours is a community where our joys are amplified, a caring community where our sorrows are lessened. We take this moment to reflect on our joys and sorrows and acknowledge the mutual support of our community. If you would like to, please share a brief and personal joy and or sorrow now.
Christy Hazel. I think a lot of you know that Connor and I are here all by ourselves. We don't have any extended family in the area. And so usually I go to his stuff, and he goes to my stuff, and that's all we've got. And this week he had a school play, and I had put it on the listserv, and then we put out some invitations, and we ended up with Larry and Harriet and Kathleen and Michael Oldfather, and so it was great to have some honorary grandparents there to watch his play, and then I had a ceremony on Thursday on the base, and I had asked Molly about 2 months ago if she'd go, and she said, "Oh yeah, sure, sure." Well, then I found out it was during the week, not on the weekend, and I said, "Well, you know, you don't have to miss work to come to it. That's okay." And she says, "No, I'll come." And not only did Molly come, but she brought Sandy along with her, and so it's been a great week that not only did we have community, but we had family.
The ceremony that my mom was talking about was her graduation from college.
Drew Venom, Amber and I's son Xavier was born on Friday, November 30th. Mom and baby are both doing great. They want to get out here as soon as they can, but not quite yet.
As my performance career has been changing, as some of you know, I've been transitioning to sell some of my violins. I will have two beautiful violins left, but I was thankful and thrilled to get to sell one to our music director's daughter. And yesterday I heard that one that I took up to St. Paul sold to a 14-year-old who is winning competitions, and that's a wonderful thing. And I was very happy to hear that, and I still have one I'm playing on today. So.
Shirley Hobrock, welcoming and membership chair. We have another joy. We have two new members as of last week, Jessica and Mark Long. And Jessica is standing here and back with Katie.
I'm Kathy Hedge, and I had a great joy Friday night because I got to go to Nate Thompson Weaver's beautiful display, his art graduation display at K-State. It was some really magnificent work, and I think Gabrielle and Larry have just an amazing son. So I wanted to share that with you.
I'm Lily Colburn, Sandy's daughter. I have a joy that me and Maeve Tenona and Rose and Ronan and Jocelyn went shopping for children at the emergency shelter.
And it's with the money that we all raised last week for Helping Hands. It was over $550 that they...
This is Katie, as many of you know, and as many of you also know, my kids have tons of food allergies, and I have kind of both a joy and a concern that we've been accepted to a doctor in Boston that treats conditions like hers, so I'm hopeful that in the spring we'll get to go to Boston and hopefully make some progress for Katie so that she can be feeling better and eating more foods and not be sick all the time.
All right. May we remember those who have spoken, those they have named, and those we hold in silence in our hearts. And for every parent and every grandparent and every uncle and aunt and sister and brother who has ever lost a child. Well, I think we should change our minds and do the children's story from up here. I was going to do it over here, but I think we should do it here. So come on up. All right. Do most of you like to draw?
Yes.
Does anybody not like it? Well, I know someone who doesn't like it at all. Her name is Isa Eric's daughter. And she hates drawing. When she goes to school, she wants to learn about the stars and dinosaurs. She'd rather know about fossils. She's terrible at drawing. When they ask her to draw a snowman, it always just looks like a blob. A big old blob. You know what a blob is? What's a blob? A big squiggly blob. Right, it's like nothing, right? It's just a blob. And Isa would try for a while, and then she'd get frustrated and angry and just break her pencil in half. But you know, in Sweden, it gets very dark in the wintertime, very dark, and it gets light about 9 o'clock in the morning, and then about 3 o'clock, it starts getting very dark. So the days that you're not at school are very long, because you can't go out in the woods and play. You have to stay home. So one day, Isa's friends were all busy, and she had nothing she could do at all. So she was looking around her room, and all of a sudden she said, whoa, what's that? And it was a very, very colorful pencil. She didn't know how it got there. It was a total surprise. She was just amazed. She said, I'm going to pick that pencil up. And as soon as she picked that pencil up, she thought, I'm going to draw something. So she started to draw a circle. And then, psst, the drawing talked to her. Can you believe that? Yes, it did. It said, boy, that's a bad circle. It looks like a blob. Erase it. Oh, okay. So she erased it, and she tried again. And the circle said, well, that'll do. But I need some eyes. So draw some circles in the circle. So she drew a circle and another circle. She goes, those are awful eyes, the circle said. I can't see anything out of those eyes. So erase. And she drew the eyes in again, and the circle with the eyes said, well, that's a lot better. But you can do better. So let's start all over again. And Isa said, okay, I'll try again. So this time the circle actually was almost a circle. And the eyes were circles with points in them that could see into Isa's eyes. And then the circle said, well, I just look like a big old lollipop. You're going to have to do something else. So she drew a nose. She goes, no, not a nose. That looks like a pig's nose. I want a human nose. So she erased it and tried again and erased it and tried it again. And then the drawing says, that smells pretty good. That smells good. And then she said, how about some lips? I need some lips because this whispering in your ear is just not working. So she drew some lips. Nah. That's a crow's lips, like it's a big old caw. I want to say something other than caw. So she raced it, and she drew another one, and it looked like a dog. No, a chicken. Oh, my God, I don't want to be a chicken. So she tried again. And this time she drew almost a perfect mouth. And the drawing said, oh, my, I'm not a lollipop. I'm a real drawing. So Isa spent the rest of the afternoon perfecting her drawing of the little person. And the next day when She got ready to go to school. She looked for her special pencil, and it was gone. It was nowhere to be found. So she went to school, and art class came, and she thought, oh, no, will I be able to draw? I don't think so without my special pencil. And so she took out a pencil from her pencil case. She chose a green one. She thought, this time it'll be a green person. And she started drawing. And there the person emerged, and it was better than a lot of the kids who always drew better than she did. And she learned, she heard the drawing say, as if it came from her own voice, you just have to keep on trying. Don't give up. And then things will be revealed to you. You will learn, and you will grow into your ability to do great things. So, I hope you all find ways to do the things that you love and the things you may not love, but learn something about them, like the special magic pencil. So, that's the story. Does anybody have any questions about this pencil? Do you think it's real? No, it's a pretend pencil, right? But do you ever hear that small voice inside that tells you to do something when you don't want to do it? No? No small voice inside? No one's ever had that voice say, well, I should try a little harder? Not one of you? Maeve? You've heard that voice, right? No? Maybe? Clara? Okay. All right. Well, I think you know what I'm talking about. Sometimes there's a small voice that needs to be listened to, and it tells us how to do things better and to give ourselves to doing things better. All right? All right. Thanks a lot, guys.
We're going to sing a song today that is in your program. Let me put this down for a second. And if you look at the insert, you'll see that it's on the insert of the program. It's a Nigerian song that is going to be sung this Friday on the 21st around the world in what's called a global choir. And the people that have started this is an environmental group called One Earth, One Voice. It's at the bottom of the insert, oneearthonevoice.org. And they have been traveling. It was started by this woman who is an actual classical opera singer, but wanted to sing this particular song, which is Ise Oluwa Kole Bajeo. We're going to sing nothing but that. It's going to be shown on the wall on a video, and it will be sung with that. We'll sing with it. We'll play a couple instruments. And we're asking you to join us when you feel comfortable with this. You'll hear it from us and from the video, and then when you feel ready, just join us. And we hope to get, it's real easy once you get going, hope to get a full house singing. It means that which has been created can never be destroyed. And like I said, at four o'clock this Friday, Central Standard Time, it will be sung all over the world in all of these countries, and they're in almost every continent, as you see in your program. So join us in doing this global choir song now, and if you happen to be thinking about it and have the words maybe join them at the Global Choir at 4 o'clock on Friday the 21st. Okay. And then when you feel ready, you can come in. They'll be sung over and over again. Okay, Mark, whenever you're ready.
Ishe Olua, Kole Ba Jeho, Ishe Olua, Kole Ba Jeho, Kole Ba
Recently, someone shared a story about a teacher who taught poetry at K-State. I don't have all of the details in mind, but I do believe I can share the essence of this story. This woman had studied in Denver and then got a job teaching in the creative writing department at K-State. And she wrote to her friend after she had been teaching for a while and said, "I just have had a bone biopsy and it doesn't look good." And so she didn't know what to do. She finished teaching that semester, and her students loved her so much and felt that they had gained so much from her wisdom, her knowledge, and dedication to teaching this art. The students said, "We can't let you go." So the next semester, they organized, and every day there was care for her with cleaning and food and everything that she needed. This class came to her, and then they would meet in the living room, and the poetry discussion and sharing would begin. And then 2 weeks before the end of the semester, she could no longer leave her bedroom. So the class moved in to her bedroom. And there, from her bed, the students listened, and she listened, and they shared from the depths of their being. 2 weeks after the semester, she died. But the gift of her teaching is carried on by each and every one of those students into their lives and into the world. May we share our gifts so generously with such deep affection for what is real and human. I'm reminded, as Slavomir finished that wonderful Chopin waltz, that this will be his last Sunday playing with us. He will be going on sabbatical, and certainly we will miss the wondrous gift he shares with us. So, thank you, Slavomir. Now I'd like to share a story with you called Playing with the Italians. On the last day of a conference, Edward Frost remembers attending a workshop that sounded harmless enough. It had to do with what one person could do to help create a sustainable environment. To his horror, the leader started by asking everyone to hold hands with people beside him. Ed usually managed to avoid this sort of thing, the hand-holding, hugging, foot massage sort of thing. But it was too late. The woman beside him was clearly a workshop pro and quickly had Ed's hand in a firm grip. They were instructed to tell each other a story about the first time in their memories in which they had taken an independent action that had made a difference. Ed had come to hear a good talk, maybe get inspired, maybe even get an idea for a sermon because, like me, he's a Unitarian Universalist minister. But here he was, trapped, handheld, and they were going to share. "You go first," Ed said. Off she went without barely a breath. Part of his brain was registering her story, with another part was frantically trying to come up with something to say when his turn came up. He had nothing. A bell rang. His partner stopped talking. It was Ed's turn. He had nothing. For an awful moment, his mind stayed absolutely blank. And then out it came. The story he had not merely forgotten, but actually didn't even know he knew. He was 7 years old, living in England. It was the immediate aftermath of the Second World War. He and his family lived in a large city and across from a park where in winter when it snowed, the kids took their sleds to the long hill in the center of the park. That winter, they discovered that the hill had been adopted by Italians. Italian prisoners of war. The war had been long over for them. They were held in minimum security while governments made the deals that would send them back home. Confined to camps during the night, they were free to roam the city during the daylight hours. They discovered the park and the ice-covered hill. They had no skis, but their big hobnailed boots served well enough in a sport second nature to them. Knees bent, arms outspread, they flew down the hill laughing, shouting in their wonderful, so un-English language, thrilling in the familiar bite of the cold wind. They had survived. They were alive. And soon they would be going home. We found each other, the children and the Italians. The first brave boy, it was not Ed, allowed himself to be picked up and slung up and over onto the shoulders of an alpine skier without skis and borne laughing and screeching down the hill. The adventure went on for days. We rushed to the hill after school and early in the frosty weekend mornings. Friends were made. Friendship and trust. "Hey, Harry, look, no hands." One evening, Ed came home, flushed and breathless. "What on earth have you been doing?" "Playing with the Italians," Ed said with joy. His father was furious. The Italians were the enemy. "But the war is over. They don't have any guns. They aren't bombing us. They don't even want to fight us." But Ed found himself up against the official view. They'd spent the nights of 2 years or more in a damp and stinking air raid shelter. Much of the city was still in ruins. Great Aunt Rose had died in a London blitz. And I, Ed, was playing with the enemy. Loud and clear, "Stay away from the Italians." "I was a good boy," said Ed. "Obedient, happy, my dad's pal. But something was wrong with being forbidden such joy and friendship because of something called the enemy. A concept that didn't fit my experience and these loving and life-loving men. I, Ed, disobeyed." It had been a long afternoon of sliding, walking, playing soccer, games of cowboys and Indians. I must have been late getting home because as I was leaving the park, my father was crossing the street toward the entrance of our house. He said, "What have you been doing?" he shouted, getting right to it. Tears, I fought them back, he said, tongue stuck to the roof of his mouth, not grown enough yet for the British upper stiffer lip. But Ed came out with it. "I was playing with the Italians." He slapped my face. That was terrible, the most terrible moment of my life. Terrible more in the shock of it than the pain. My father had never hit me, never did again. And here's the moment remembered that started the story flowing. Ed remembers looking full into his anger, his father's clear and furious anger, and saying, "All right, I am going back." No doubt there were threats about what further disobedience would bring, but his parents gave up. Ed did go back to play with the Italians until one day they were gone. That was the end of the story, but it doesn't end there, as he told his workshop companion. But it was not, when the exercise was over, the leaders asked if anyone wanted to share with the whole group what they had said to their partners. He could not believe himself. His hand shot up and he almost pulled it back down, but there it was. And he told the story again. And he thought, what on earth am I doing? I'm not this kind of person that shares intimate stories of my pain and joy. He told the story again and found within himself unfolding what, moment by moment, he realized what the story meant. It was a story about self-discovery, personal power, and taking a stand that would make a difference. But in that moment of defiance, in that declaration, all right, I'm going back. In that moment, he confronted all of that with the reality and the legitimacy of his own experience. The legitimacy and the value of his own experience. He separated himself out from the tangled mess of ingrained bigotry, fear, and self-serving stereotypes. These men were not the enemy. They were just men. Fathers, brothers, sons. They were friends. They were not evil. And if that laughter, friendship, joy sharing was evil, then he was going to play with it and know it firsthand. Ed knew his father was wrong. That's what the workshop leaders were helping people to find. Some moment in their lives in which rightness, truth, justice were revealed so crystal clear and unadorned that acting upon it was a matter of course. Ed was not defying his father so much as he was responding to something no less than a revelation. His experience of the men he played with was a pure experience of relationship with people, not as Italians, not as foreigners, certainly not as the enemy. From birth, then, our true self, our original experience, begins to be suppressed by the social demand to conform to conventional experience. Originally, unique individuality begins to fall under the requirements of the herd mentality. This is the empowerment of the mass and the disempowerment of the individual. The leaders of the workshop he attended knew that each person gives up much of their power along the way. To facilitate the routine adjustments of everyday life. When is the first time you realized you could make a difference? When joy sprung from your individuality, from making a choice that defined you, that let you know your own power, so that you could live and act and breathe from that place of power. Remember it and let it serve you today and tomorrow and for the rest of the days of your life. But Ed's story doesn't end here. It's amazing. As it happened, when he was leaving the workshop, a young woman approached him and said, "My grandfather was an Italian prisoner of war in your city. He often spoke of playing with the boys in the park. Thank you for playing with my grandfather." So we each have this power to share, to lift up, to live out of our original meaning and to give it with joy. Yeah, all right. So, no, that's right. So we're going to go get Larry, but in the meantime, are there moments in your life when you discovered what it meant to be you in such a way that you did not merge with the herd, or you did not listen, and you said, no, this is who I am, and this is how I must be? Do you have a mic? You have your running shoes on, Doug. There we go.
I am Kathy Hedge. I just, when I was listening to that story, I just remembered a moment when my mom came home and told all of us that her father had passed away. And oh, I adored my grandpa. He was the neatest man in the world. And I've spoken of him several times, and my mom started to cry, and my big brother herded us all out of the room, like, you know, she needs to have her privacy. And my big brother is a powerful personality. And I just remember just turning around and telling him no, and I ran back in the room and wrapped my arms around my mom, and I remember just all my other brothers and sisters followed me, and we all just climbed on the bed and surrounded her. And she always said that was one of the best times in her life.
Les Frazier. Mike, you asked when we discovered joy. And I've been studying the Spirit, and I think I've got more joy finding what my spirit is and tried to follow it. I had a dream last night, and I think the Spirit spoke to me through that dream. I don't think that's all my spirit is, but it said be more creative. Is that what you want? Is that what kind of thing you want to hear?
Thank you very much, Les. That is great. Yes. The gift of your dream. May we all share it.
Bryce Hobrock. A similar story that's guided me all my life, really. I was 6 years old in 1943, and we were living on the farm, and the first prisoners of war had just arrived from North Africa in October of 1943. And as you know, they were housed all over the country, including near to us. A neighbor had gone to get a dozen German prisoners of war from Hayes and brought them over, and half of them went to our farm to work. And I was very curious and asked to stay home from school. And of course, with all the propaganda about the evil enemy and so forth, why, I was very much affected by what I could see. I guess I was very curious. And out in the field, the soldiers were very happily going about the work of putting feed into shocks, and they were guarded by a single U.S. soldier in uniform with a carbine, and I don't know if he had bullets or not, maybe one bullet. But before long, a very tall German soldier, and understand they were all dressed in the same clothing that they were wearing on the front in North Africa, more or less. One of them walked over to me, picked me up, no reaction from the soldier, put me on his shoulder, and said in perfect English, "I have a little boy just like you back home." And I suppose I was uncomfortable, but he put me down, and there's lots more to the story, but that essential encounter has made a difference to me for the last 70 years.
Does anybody else have a story they'd like to share? Sabrina.
Sabrina Boker. When I was younger, I thought I was going to a Methodist church, and I thought I was going to be a reverend and all that. But they said, the reverend, Greg said, why don't you go with me to the East Annual Conference? So I went to the East Annual Conference, and they were talking about the gay issue. And then I got up, and I had a little pink badge to me, and I could get up and talk, and I said, I don't know about them being, because I didn't know I was gay at the time, but I said, I don't know about them being priests or nothing, or reverends, but you shouldn't be telling them they can't worship God and stuff. And apparently I made a big stink, but people came up to the reverend and said, I'm glad you talked about that and all that. But apparently a lot of people didn't like that. But I was like, it must have been a firebrand back then, but something moved me to talk about it. So, yeah.
My name is Sylvia Beeman. Once my middle daughter came home from kindergarten with a coloring page, and it had a picture of a kind of like a Jesus-like figure, and she had just been to preschool at the Lutheran church, and she was kind of really into that. And it said on the page, Burger King wants to be your friend. And so I had just heard on the radio that Burger King had been bought out, I think by Pillsbury, for like $5 billion. And I tried to explain to her that Burger King was a corporation, and that Burger King wasn't really like a friend. And so then I decided to find out what was happening. And it turned out that our principal at our school was getting her PhD, and her big shtick was cooperation between corporations and the school district to infuse new money. So my friend from the fellowship, Nancy Duteau, and I decided that this wasn't really appropriate. And we found out other things, like the Burger King man was coming into my kids and other kids' classes to do math, and they would do problems about hamburgers. And then my older daughter brought home her art project was a hamburger made out of clay. And then I asked some more, and then it turned out all the teachers were getting to go have free breakfast at Burger King. And one of them happily shared her big three-ring binder with me that referred to each school as a market. So then I called all the other schools, and all of the other principals had turned this down, this offer, except our school. And so my daughter's teacher told me I was a troublemaker, and my next-door neighbor, who was my really good friend, and we raised our three kids together, she told me I was a troublemaker, for which she later apologized for. But we started with our babysitting cult. Well, some of us worked, and so our child swap group, we sort of got activated, and anyway, we got Burger King out of the school, although he did show up at the school's 75th birthday and handed out pop and coupons for hamburgers. And so I've been a troublemaker ever since.
We have time for one more if there is someone who'd like to share.
It's another restaurant story, but it was probably, if not the most, one of the most expensive restaurants in the country called The Mansion in Dallas. And in chamber orchestra, a couple weeks before Christmas, our conductor told us that we were going to get to play at The Mansion all week during lunchtime, and then proceeded to just plan to have myself and three other players, the top players in the chamber orchestra, and I thought that was very unfair. So I called him and told him, and I was probably about 16, I arranged groups that included everybody through the whole week. So I got to go to The Mansion once, and then groups played Christmas week all week in different groups. So kind of went against the grain.
All right. Thank you for sharing, and now for some more sharing. Thank you.
We're going to move to another opportunity for you to sing, and that will be, thank you for our place, that, O come all ye faithful, adeste fidelis. We will sing the first verse in Latin, which translates almost literally to the first verse as it's written in English. If you would like to sing along with us on the first verse, feel free to do so. But then by the time we get done with that, if you'll stand. And we're going to follow a very old pattern as it's written in the hymnal. It goes almost 300 years back for the chorus. The sopranos first sing, or some of the women, Adeste Fidelis. And then the altos and tenors join them, Adeste Fidelis. And then the basses come in, and you know what the basses do. We'll do that.
Please be seated. The holidays are not so much a matter of explanation and interpretation, though we can spend a lot of time doing that. It is more of a mood and a feeling. It is a time in the cycle of the year set apart by hope and fellowship and generosity. This is the season made holy when we make music in the heart, when the harmonies within can bring peace and lift up joy. Mm-hmm.